Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. I'm Larry Holmes from ESPN New York 98.7 FM. I have the pleasure of talking to you about the man you're about to listen to, Doc Stanley, the legendary Doc Stanley. I always say before him there was none, after him there shall be no more. When you listen to Doc Stanley, you have to appreciate the knowledge, the connection. When he's at the ballpark during baseball, he's around the water cooler talking to the athletes. When he's at the basketball games, he's in the locker room talking to players, talking to general managers, talking to front office personnel to bring you the insight why people make the decisions they make. When he's on the ice skating rink, he's talking to some of the few African-American, African-Canadian, African players who are on the ice right now making a difference. You are listening to Doc Stanley on Sports and Death.
Doc Stanley, Sports and Death, on Blog Talk Radio on the Trust and Guardian Network, and we open every show with the iconic John Coltrane. Dear Lord, we thank you for another day. More importantly, have your will, have your way. We thank you for looking through so much we take for granted. And we, Lord, we ask you to give us not so much what we want, but what we need. And we hope that what we need is also what we want. We love you. We come to pay homage to you, one and only true God, and your darling son Jesus, our Lord and Savior. More importantly, Lord, let your way be our way. Thank you for blessings that have come, will come all on earth. Come on. But we thank you for your love, your grace and mercy. For grace and mercy. Mercy is not getting what you do deserve, and grace is getting what you don't deserve. And we thank you. In the name of your darling son Jesus. Amen. Dr. Stanley, Sports and Death. I'll talk radio. Just go on a Sunday sports wrap. A lot of things are happening. The Dodgers are still on fire. The Jets win. They won 1-9. The preseason, Mark Sanchez plays most of the game. All the quarterbacks are down. He's the one that had to stay. Jets look very good. You may say they were a bad team. They may win just 3 games in Chicago, but the Jets look good. And that's the bottom line. And if they didn't win the game, you say, how could they lose the game? Well, they did lose the game. Big win for them. The Giants are playing today. We'll go live at MetLife Stadium where NFL 4-1, Cincinnati Sea Wings. Cedric Raymond will be giving us an update before that game kicks off and some other things of note around the league. A-Rod's story just continues and continues. Now he's tall on pitch. It just never seems to stop. The Dodgers, though, are one of the reasons they're on high fire. National League-wise, signing award candidate Clayton Kinshaw lowers ERA to 1.80 right now. Since the post-war, his ERA is the best. Right now, I mean, two guys that are right underneath him is the great Whitey Ford and Randall Whitey Ford. Whitey Ford is 2.64 is Whitey Ford's ERA at 2.74, and I've known him as the great Sandy Koufax, 2.75. And you imagine Koufax, and this is all his Koufax is over that 5-year period. You know, Koufax had a 5-year period of 27 wins. 1.7 ERA and 200 strikeouts. 27 wins, 1.7 ERA, and 200 strikeouts a year. That 5-year period, that 63, 64, 65, 66, unbelievable. Unbelievable. Unremarkable. Greatest pitcher I saw. If I had one game, one pitcher outside of Satchel Paige, it would be him. Going by what I saw. Okay, it's Koufax, my right-handed favorite. So, you know, none other than the great Dominican dandy Juan Marichal and Tom, terrific Seva and Bob Gibson. You know, Bob kind of told me, though, that the greatest young pitcher you ever saw was none other than Dwight Doc Gooden. Gooden's numbers, 17-9 his first year, leading the league in strikeouts, comebacks the next year, wins the Cy Young Award, and wins the Triple Crown of pitching at the youngest age ever. And he had the highest winning percentage of any pitcher at one particular time. And we know what happened with Doc. But when Doc was Doc, nobody operated like him. He was en route to being probably the greatest right-handed pitcher of all time, and definitely unequivocally right up there with Seva as the greatest right-hander to pitch for the New York Mets. Doc Stanley, Sports Net Blog Talk Radio on the Trust and Government Network, broadcast from our 59th Street Studios. It's a Sunday sports wrap, and we're just going around the league talking about a few things. Saying interesting, you know, this is the 5th anniversary of the March on Washington. And I remember that if it was yesterday, and got a chance to see Mr. King. Should have went up and met him, really. He came to speak at our church, and I really wish I had walked up there. I don't know if he had to rush out and everything, but I just really wish I had walked up there to speak him. But now what we're going to do, let's go out to Giant Stadium. I keep saying Giant Stadium, but it's not Giant Stadium. I keep saying Giant Stadium, but I think in the mindset, you know, that people see it still as Giant Stadium. I think people probably still send mail out to Giant Stadium. It's MetLife Stadium. And depending on who's playing that day, I guess today it is Giant Stadium. Yesterday was Jet Stadium, big win. New York City gets a weekend of New York football back to back. Just last night, big winners are considered Jacksonville Jaguars. Now it is the New York Giants. They play the Indianapolis Colts. Well, the difference changed, with the change back a few years ago, there's no big man anymore. Amos Roper, illustrious and incomparable PR director for the Giants, is now the head man out there PR-wise, and we said hello to him, and how well this boy is going. But now, let's go out to the press box. It's football, MetLife Stadium. It's NFL 4-1. What's happening out there, C-Wings?
Hey, Doc, and a panel and our distinguished listeners out there. First and foremost, just want, on behalf of the Sports in Depth panel and nation, wanted to wish Dustin Keller a full recovery as he sustained a devastating injury to his ACL, MCL, PCL, and even possible nerve damage and a dislocated right knee in the second quarter of the game.
You know, we were talking about that en route to the studio here, and you heading out to Jersey, and it came across, and you know, just not a nicer guy. One of the guys that bled Jet Green when he was with the Jets. One of the guys that you just also always associated with being a Jet, and you were thinking that maybe he'd be one of those guys that would be a lifetime Jet. But you talk about a class act on the football field and a class act in the game of life, and you talk about Justin Keller. And class acts are what we have here on Sports and Death, is one of our class acts outside of Cincinnati Sea Wings, this NFL 4-1, is Michael Selsmith Jr., the man who coined the Sports and Death phrase, and his class acts continue. He will now bring you in to the Sports and Death Nation. Young man, do you have something to say?
I do indeed, good doctor. The Sports in Depth Nation is here. The Sports in Depth panel is here. I'm Mel Smith Jr. I'm here. We're here courtesy of the Trust in God, the radio network. And the straw that stirs the drink is here. And that is the incomparable Doc Stanley. Take it away, Doc.
Thank you, Rudy. And with that, we'll use that a chance to break right into our promo, including Brazil, who will now host the World Cup next year. And 2 years after that, they'll get the Olympics, first Latin American country ever to get the Olympics. And we also salute our Brazilian sponsors, starting off with TCJ Productions, the studio and production of international promoter, Jason Cotamasa Jr., and his DCJ Production Studios, where we produce and record the high percentile of our shows in Fort Laser. The other place we broadcast from live is the iconic Tabajara Hotel. My good friend Justino's, the best pizza hotel in all of Brazil, El Mundo. We still go also Marina Park, one of the top 5-star hotels in Brazil. Justino's, late at night, you need a snack. Hey, before they close, you decide that everything else is closed. Justino's, they are the best. Sandwich, sodas, shakes, walana, hamburgers, chicken, late at night, they do it right. They're not the best, but after the best. And Luis Souza's iconic Charlie Brazza Restaurante, all part of the villa, lovely, Fortaleza, capital city of the Tennessee Eye. Once again, our Brazilian sponsor, we say, obrigado, and companheiro and Vito. And also, hello to my lovely goddaughter, Sarah, in San Paulo, beijo, mi amor. And also my padrino, my afiado, Viada, Shaquino, and Nell. And with that, it's time to slide back out to MetLife Stadium. I finally get it right that time. Usually I'm going to Giants Stadium. And let's talk some more football as the Giants get ready to play their second preseason game. Big winners last week against the Pittsburgh Steelers. Jets will play the Steelers in the course of the season, but we're back out there. We left on the subject of the serious injury. And you know, it seems that in a lot of ways, Wings, and as you're getting here too, Mel, I don't know if you heard that Justin Keller has I mean, is there any part of his body that wasn't hurt on this? This could be, and you talked about it too, Cincinnati C, this could be the end of his career, correct?
Absolutely. I mean, he may even have nerve damage. So, Peter, this is one of the most serious injuries that you can take as a football player in the offensive position that he's in, tight end. As you know, when he played for the New York Jets, he was the go-to guy for Mark Sanchez, overall pass receiver, number of receptions for the 2011-2012 season, over 50 receptions for that year. But also, he was dealing with a lot of hamstring injuries. That's why he didn't play too much last season. He had that nagging hamstring injury. Now with this is a devastating injury. This is simply the end of his career. We hope and pray that he does get back, but he's going to be out for the season. I mean, it's going to send Miami for a scramble. For tight end to fill the big massive shoes that he left. So I'll be monitoring that and updating our Sports and Destination out there on his condition. We hope and pray that he make a full recovery. But
he taught like 3 nerds. Not 1, but 2, but I'm hearing like 3.
The ACL, PCL, MCL. Nerve damage,
wow.
And dislocated knee.
What was that, Justin Keller?
Justin Keller, I mean...
He has a very serious career-ending injury.
It's like that injury
does anybody know if he got the money before... I'm hoping he's financially, set, man, because I think his career may be over.
He received some money. As you know, in the National Football League, it's a sport like none other than like NBA or Major League Baseball, where the contract is guaranteed.
And I think that's a disgrace. I have to be honest with you, C and Dustin, Doc. I don't know how the hell the Players Association ever went for non-guaranteed contracts. How the hell they ever go for it, especially in that sport.
Yeah, I mean, it's such a big turnover. I mean, you look at the athletes, they're there to earn as much money as they can in the short window that they do have. I mean, when you look at players like Jerry Rice that played so many seasons in the NFL, those are real anomalies when it comes to the National Football League. And terms of longevity. Brett Favre played for so many seasons in the NFL. You look at quarterbacks like Peyton Manning. And, you know, it's just a league that the longevity, the average football career, it's roughly about 3 to 4 years for most players.
It goes with the territory of all competitive sport. The body wasn't made to be stretched and pulled and tugged and jump on and beat up. It goes that way. And that's unfortunately, this is why, yes, you're right when you did he get the money up front? Does he have a guaranteed payroll for the rest of his life? Look, Peyton Manning with his 3 surgeries on his freaking neck. I mean, you know, let's hope he has enough in the sack at home. To when it's over, it's over. But Justin Keller, I think he's finished. I mean, that was a very serious injury.
Very serious.
And you know, there's another thing, too. JPP, this is why sometimes I call this thing stupid planning. He had a bad back.
Really bad.
A few months ago, he got surgery on his back. For God's sake, when the hell did they operate on his back after the last season?
Right.
I mean, come on. What sense does that make? And this is, you know, and he's going to go back. He's not doing pads. He's just working out, and he's looking good. Big deal. When you get an interruption in your body of the normalcy of your anatomy, you know, you don't recover that fast.
You're right.
And he's going to go back and pull pads and start the season.
What makes it worse, Dust, is he's not just a regular guy. He's not just a speed down the street with a bat. He's a big guy. What, 6'4",
yeah,
he
was,
five,
what, 6'6", 6'7"?
Yeah.
6'6", and he's an animal. He's a Lawrence Taylor that'll dive head first to get you. I mean, so how is that injury going to... how is that operation going to hold up for what he does?
You might be talking about his entire career, Doug. Might be talking about JBB's career if this is an handled right.
Yeah, exactly. So this is what I don't understand about.
Coach that gang, we have a St. Louis is playing Green Bay, and Green Bay is leading in the fourth quarter of that game, 12-0 when the preseason games. Green Bay, too, will be one of the teams that will invade MetLife Stadium this year as they will play the Giants again this season here. So just to update, fourth quarter, about 11 minutes left to go, a little under 10 minutes left to go. Green Bay leads St. Louis 12-0, and we're talking about some injuries. Justin Keller's who topped it off here, former Jet now, look like he may be, we're saying that where I left it off, this could be the end of Justin Keller.
Oh, and absolutely. I mean, it's definitely a situation that's going to have to be monitored. I mean, for the average citizen out there that's a non-athlete, they would be done. I mean, you see what type of damage and that these guys take day in and day out, not only on the field. You look at the number of injuries that are in training camp, even before they step off the field. Guys are, you know, tearing ankles, rolling ankles, ACLs, and, I mean, we even look at Tom Brady. I mean, even though his injury was not devastating, you look at Quentin Coakley's yesterday in the Jets game. He hurt his ankle, but it won't require surgery. Take it back just to show you how devastating and how brutal the sport this is. The 5'11", 164-pound 11th grader De'Andre Thurman out of the Creekside High School Seminoles died yesterday after a play. It was ruled that he died from a broken neck vertebrae due to blunt force trauma. This 16-year-old kid died, a very promising football player. He had earned a scholarship. I'm not too sure about which college it was, but a very devastating injury. He was able to get up, and then he collapsed on the field. His coach ran over to him. He was taken to the hospital, and his death was ruled from an injury to his neck vertebrae. So it just goes to show you the magnitude and the brutality of this sport. I mean, each and every play, you look at the Rutgers player. broke his neck and was ultimately paralyzed from the neck down. I mean, it's just, any given Sunday, I say any given play can end your career and possibly your life. Thank God we haven't had a player lose their life on the field during the field of play. I mean, we had the player in the Vikings many years ago die during training camp.
Yeah, the training camp, the guy died, yeah.
You know, overheated body. So our thoughts and prayers go out and condolences to the family of Joshua Sherman. He left in peace, cornerback for the Creekside High School Seminoles, who passed away yesterday after receiving a devastating injury to his vertebrae. Right? We also with Dustin Keller recovery. And also a return to the field to play back for the National Football League. Doc, getting back to yesterday's game, New York Jets, pretty heavy win over the lowly Jacksonville Jaguars, 37-13. Mark Sanchez in the game was 13-23, 159 yards, he sacked one time for minus 6 yards. He threw one INT, which the fans of Metlife Stadium let him know about it. But
well, you know, it seems the INT is normal for him. But what I want to say, you know, he played most of the game due to forfeit, but he did well. I mean, when he came into the game, the Jets were behind. He left the game, the Jets had a 2-touchdown and a field goal lead. And the thing that bothers people about playing here. Because I heard the news today, and they said, you know, Mark Sanchez, boom, he threw an INT in the red zone. You know, okay. I mean, forget the INT in the red zone. Jets scored a lot of points. Mark Sanchez got him 17 points. They were behind when he came into the game. When he left the game, they had a 2-touchdown and a field goal lead. Nobody has monitored him more than we have. Nobody has been first to single out his deficiency, and also first to figure out to single out the fact that he's lost a lot of his weapons. We've been the first to back him, to loot him, and say when things aren't going wrong. And this is a problem with New York City. I mean, they won. Why are we talking about the INT that he threw in the red zone?
Is a soap opera mentality of when things are going wrong, they're going to go worse.
No, hold tight. I understand that. We're not talking about the mentality. But that's the problem. That's the problem. And it seems to be more prevalent and more obvious and more apparent in New York City. I mean, they won the football game. That's the bottom line. You won the football game. He played well. They won the game. He was responsible for positive drives. Okay, through the INT, why did you have to mention it? Dusty went 4-for-4 yesterday. One time he struck out. So what? I mean, one time he made it out, 4-for-5. It's understand it, sir. It's understand it. The thing I say is, it's just really no need for it. I mean, and this is the problem. Athletes do not want to play in New York City. Now, I've said it many times. Terry Pillington said he took a half
million dollars. It goes with the territory. You got to be able to deal with
Dusty. Fine. We understand what it goes with. We understand that. The point is, it shouldn't be.
The reason look at, not to cut you off, but I have to agree with Dusty. It's a New York state of mind.
I said that. That's what I said. It's New York. That's what I said. It's New York, and it's why people don't want to play in New York.
Let me say this quickly, if I may, to the crew. I would love playing in New York. Okay,
exactly.
Love it. When I wrestled in Boston High School, I loved playing on the road.
Exactly.
Anybody can cheer your name at home with the applause and the home cooking and all that. I love being on the road. I love the heat. Loved it. So I would be one of the few people that would love playing in New York, especially if it was a hostile environment. Would love it, every bit of it.
We're not talking about representing New York. We're talking about getting a fair share from the media. That's what we're talking about. We're talking about if you have nothing positive to say, then don't say anything.
It's not the media's job.
It's
their job. It's the media's job to report. Depends on if you're talking about a journalist, I mean, you know, or a columnist. I like to see, you know, columnists can give their opinion, whatever the case it is.
If you're a journalist, if you're a columnist, I don't care what you are, okay? My point here is that in New York City, why do they always, not sometimes, not most of the time, why do they always find a negative spin? And you say you love to play in New York, okay? A lot of guys love to play in New York, okay? But Don Mattingly, I'm sure he loved to play in New York. Dave Righetti loved to play in New York. As Mattingly played his whole career. Both guys said, I'm talking about guys that told me. I'm talking about Mattingly, who played his whole career in New York. Righetti, the most of his career in New York. Both guys tell me, and there's not too fine of guys as people and athletes. And they say, you know, you just get tired of. I mean, I understand it goes. They always find a negative spin. Judge hit 400. He hit 302 runs and scores. He's won the last five games, but the ERA is 5.2. You know, the problem. You don't have a problem going to Boston.
That's journalism, Doc. Let me ask you a question here. Because you keep belaboring that you got to censor what the writers are going to write. And they shouldn't write negative as well when there's such a 100% positive. That's nonsense. First of all, let me tell you something. A-Rod, this entire weekend, headlines, he's a snitch. A-Rod, he squealed on Sevilla. And he squealed on Blom, and he squealed on everybody. Mm-hmm. Hey, when the pile is piled, there's more shit to be piled, and there's more to be piled, and there's more to be piled. It's selling papers. All you saw was headlines. The snitch. They had a figurine of a rat with A-Rod's face in the rat face. I mean, come on. And that's all the people.
Dusty, I understand what you're saying, but. We're going to move from this. Thing is, why is A-Rod, once again, why is he the poster boy for steroids? And my question is, are you doing the same thing in LDI? Hold on a second.
I'm away.
Why is he the poster boy for this? I mean, there's nothing can justify you digging in dirt for your guy that has a good game. You score 42 points. 42 points is 42 points. I mean, don't say, you hit 42 points. We won the game.
You're right.
We won the game by 7. He scored 42 points, but he missed 4 free throws.
So
what, Doc?
Doc, can I make
just a quick point? I agree with you, but I also agree with Dust. And in this particular matter, okay, when you make that kind of money and you have that kind of public persona, trust me, Doc, no one is shedding any tears for Alexander Emmanuel Rodriguez pulling 27 large a year, okay? Nobody's shedding any tears for him. With the big dough comes the big heat, okay? It's as simple as that. With the big money and the big rep comes the big heat. It's as simple as that.
He should have stayed clean. That's what he should have done. He should have stayed clean. He should have been another Roberto Clemente. He disenfranchised a lot of kids. That's what the hell the dude did. That's why I have no pity for him. If they throw his ass out of baseball tomorrow, I will not shed a goddamn tear. That's how I am.
But you know what the problem I have with Major
League? And I be telling Doc, among other things, no one is going to shed a tear making 27-plus large a year. No one is going to be shedding any tears for Alexander Emmanuel Rodriguez.
Hell no.
But listen, I'll say this about Major League Baseball when it comes to that. When you look at a player like Mark McGwire, who was basically the poster child for the modern era of performance-enhancing drugs, they allowed him to make
to come back with La Russa.
To come back, but you have Pete Rose, and I'm not saying that Pete Rose should be
absolutely.
Banned
you're right
from the Hall of Fame, the same way as Mark McGwire and the rest of these guys that were using performance-enhancing drugs. But when you allow Mark McGwire to come back into the game, make money from the game, and then you ban Pete Rose, okay, you banned him, but then you don't allow him back in to make money to make the livelihood. Which way are we going here? It's the same.
You're right.
The,
see, I agree. 100%.
Something's wrong. There's a double standard there, and you're right.
But you know something that I can understand why he's banned, because, you know, when you start betting on the game, then you're a manager, man. You're messing with the integrity of baseball.
Yeah, he bet against his own team.
But when you do performance-enhancing drugs, you mess with the integrity of the game also.
True.
Duking the stats. That maybe you may not have performed the same way if you didn't use them. So you destroy the integrity of the game one way, he destroys it the next, a different way, but the same consensus is that you destroy the integrity of the game.
Well, then times when they turn around and create a gray area where one bad is not as egregious as the other bad. And this guy did it to himself. He took steroids, but it's only him. But when a guy turns around and he bet against his own team to lose or whatever, he's insulting the integrity and jeopardizing the honesty of his team. And that's how the rulings fall. And it's unfortunate. It's unfortunate. And they knew Pete Rose was a pepper pot. They knew that he loved to gamble. They knew he loved to play the dice and all that. But he didn't draw the line against betting against his own team. You know, here's another story. Let me just finish the story. A-Rod loved to go to high-stakes illegal gambling parlors. They stopped him. They told him, you want to stop that crap.
He does love those high-stake games. One not too far from Yankee Stadium, which will remain nameless. They have a hell of a game there. I'll say that. But
not too far from Yankee Stadium.
Not too far from the big boy yard.
Oh, that's fine. Legends Hall. But the fact of the matter is that the powers that be draw a line as to what is bad, what is a misdemeanor, and what is criminal. I don't know how they do that, but that's how they do it. You know, and I'm sitting here looking at the whole situation. And it says, A-Rod brought this on himself. I mean, he brought this on himself, and he's disenfranchising all these kids, especially all those kids in Washington Heights, the Latino kids who, you know, have you guys, and, you know, I'm very emphatic about it, but have you guys watched the Little League World Series?
I mean, have you
I followed it religiously. I follow religiously. Here comes a team from Taiwan. Here comes a team from Georgia, Louisiana. And they introduce the kid. Hello, my name is John Wabba. My favorite player is A-Rod. Hello, John Wabba. And my favorite player is A-Rod. Here comes a kid from Panama. Oh, yo soy, yo me llamo, yo, yo. Y mi mejor pelotero is Alejandro Rodriguez. I mean, this guy's idolized around the world.
You're right.
Look what the hell he did.
That's the guy who's well known, who's making the money and who's really well known. And that's the guy they've heard of. That's the guy they want to try to copy.
Yeah, and that's the guy that they want to emulate. And I'm happy to see this, too, that I counted a team from Georgia. And five of the four kids that they introduced, my favorite player is Derek Jeter. You know, so they know. They know what the hell is going on.
I'm going to say this about Jeter, too. You know, as far as, can you still hear me over there?
The who?
Hello?
Hello? Yeah, what is it?
Yeah, I think we lost Mel Cosell there. Maybe some technical difficulties.
Mel? Oh. No, but, you know, it's you cannot deal with the media. The media writes what they want to write. They have the journalistic freedom to write what they want and embellish on what they write. And when I picked up those papers on Saturday, and I'm a reader, I see a rat's face A-Rod's face embellished into a rat. I said, oh, my Lord, how bad can it be? Now he squealed on his, he snitched on his teammates. He's trying to get off with a break, and this is the presumption of the reporter. He's trying to get a break. That's why now he's ratting everybody else. Doesn't that happen when you make a collar? How many times that happened when I collared a firebug and he said, well, you know, I wasn't the only one setting fire to that bodega, man. You know, I had, you know, can I get a break here? It happens, man. And that's the sadness. But he brought it on himself, and that's my argument. And the media has a right to do what they want to do.
Yeah, but look at the New York Yankees are not having always had their hands clean either. Let's look
no,
back.
Of course.
The 80s,
the Copacabana, the white swapping, you know, Billy Martin five times and five times. You know, there's so many crazy things that have happened. And the media blew those things up.
But George Steinbrenner was banned from baseball. When he tried to dig up on one of his own players.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, right. Steinbrenner, yeah. Was it Dave Winfield or something?
Dave Winfield.
Huh? Yeah, and he hired that gambler.
So the Yankees, and I'm not taking anything away from A-Rod. You use the PEDs, whether you admit it or not, you still use them. Fractured yourself and the rest of the guys that uses the integrity of the game.
Exactly.
But this looks like a good relationship that was at one time. Now it's like a bad divorce.
Right.
It's ugly. It's gonna carry on for a while.
It's gonna get uglier. And that's the word. It's going to get uglier as it goes along. Because here, when he admitted his PEDs, the first voice you heard across baseball jungle was the owner of the Texas Rangers. I gave this blank all this money under all opposition, and look what he did. He was nothing but a damn cheater. You know, and I was reading some anecdotal information on the man in those two or three years with the Rangers hit over 156 home runs. I mean, give or take. And the man was juiced. Oh,
150. Oh, big time.
159. Look at that.
And Dutch, listen, if you don't think that he was juiced that year when he hit, what is that, that 50-some-odd home run? Is that 50-some-odd home run?
Yeah.
If you don't think that juice was going through his veins, and I got a bridge for sale.
I'll buy it.
But what point are you making? We knew he was juiced. I mean, what point are you making? We knew he was juiced.
The point that Dusty was making, that I was making with him, Doc, is that I understand what you're saying, that it seems to be unfair coverage to Alex as compared to all the other cheaters in the league. But you have to understand that with a guy making 27 large a year, and with the public exposure and persona that he has, nobody's going to be shedding any tears on Alexander
Emmanuel. We're back to square one here. What makes him a bigger cheater than anybody else? In other words, it's ironic that he happens to be a minority, so now we hyphen on this. I mean, once again, it's an amazing thing. You know, Pettis still in baseball. He admitted it. Giambi left baseball and had a chance to probably be a manager. They blackballed Barry Bonds out of baseball. Mark McGuire, a cheater, right? Not only is he back in baseball, but he's the batting coach of the hottest team in baseball, and he's a former batting coach of the world champion Cardinals. I'm not condoning this. But I'm just trying to say, you know, he was out sitting cast the first stones. I mean, so what makes A-Rod a worse cheat than anybody else? And we're looking at the fact that baseball knew all along what was going on. Now, you know, you're right. It sells papers. But my question is, are they writing these kind of stories about A-Rod and El Diario, El Mundo? I don't know. I mean, did anybody dog Barry Bonds in the Amsterdam, the Beacon, the City Sun? But it's just, I'm perplexed. You know, once again, when the names were leaked on the list, they were all minorities. 102 names on the list, but the names leaked were minorities. And look at Braun. Braun came out. Now he took his punishment, he's gone. Okay, you got Taito, who's got 105 games suspended. I mean, some big numbers.
I'm just saying, and you know, me and Cincinnati Sea Wings coming out to the studio and going to the game. You know, a lot of people talk about it's the kids. Bill Dodger said, "What kids? So the kids don't buy tickets to games. The kids don't buy uniforms. The kids don't buy all the stuff that they play with. The parents buy that. So the kids, you know, unless you know you as a parent, or there are a lot of people who don't have an idea who Derek Jeter is, either. Don't have an idea who is." Because the parents channel the mindset. And as I always said, you know, I'm always amazed about people frowning on a grown-up basketball player. Well, how the hell did the kid get into the game if the father didn't bring him? You know what I mean? And wasn't a grown-up a kid one time? But, you know, just talking about he let the kids down, and he was juiced. We know he was juiced. At the same time, I read the article that Bill Roden wrote, at no time did he ever fail a drug test. At no time did he ever fail a drug test. And at the time, so-called what he was taking, which has now been deemed illegal, because now, you know, you can't jaywalk, so it wasn't illegal. But the only thing I've redundantly said over and over again is, why is he the foster child? Why is what he's done so much worse than everybody else? And why is it seems that all the guys that, you know, to me, who are picked out, who singled out as the villains, are minorities? I don't hear anything about Roger Clemens anymore. And when Clemens first was so-called the inclination that Clemens was doing this, 2 days later they were talking about amnesty. And Barry Bonds' trainer said Barry didn't do it, he went to jail. Clemens' trainer said Clemens did do it, you heard no more about it. I mean, nobody's condoning what A-Rod did. Nobody's condoning what any of these guys did wrong. But why is it A-Rod? That's what I'm saying. Why is he the poster child? You know, and I mean, you look what happened to Barry Bonds got blacked out of baseball. And Barry never failed a drug test. Never failed a drug test. Barry Bonds had never failed a drug test. And yet Barry Bonds was banned from baseball. Banned from baseball. And then when Barry Bonds was going to be out there his contract, the Fritz Giants said they weren't going to bring him back, okay? Right? They weren't going to bring him back. And you mean to tell me that nobody in baseball could use Barry Bonds? You mean no team in baseball could use Barry Bonds? Amazing. The greatest player of his generation, okay, the oldest man to win the batting title, 200 walks in 1 year, 120, nobody in baseball could use Barry Bonds. Well, I mean, what a coincidence. I mean, what a coincidence that nobody used Barry Bonds. What a coincidence that the names that leaked on the list for steroids were all minorities. What a coincidence. You know? And they said if Barry just would have said that he did this, okay, they would have forgave him. Well, A-Rod said he did it, and he can't get no forgiveness. It's amazing. A-Rod, every day. There's another story. It sells papers, okay? So every day there's another story on A-Rod. You know? And like I said, I'm not condoning him, but I'm just saying, up there again, 19-0 to that score of that Green Bay St. Louis game, about 2 minutes left to go. Green Bay Packers against the St. Louis team in the playing game in St. Louis. So that game is just about. We got an update on that game? What was the question? Yeah. Okay, we got an update. Here we go. Yeah, but maybe. Hold. Okay. We got any more happening out in the MetLife Stadium?
MetLife Stadium, we're winding down to kickoff time, looking to New York Giants. The key to their success this year, this upcoming 2013, MetLife hosting Super Bowl. The key to the Giants is really healthy. You need PP coming off of back surgery. He needs to be healthy. You have Hakeem Nicks. He seems to have a lot of injuries. He's playing in today's game. We have to see how he, taking the field for the first time, how he's going to turn out. They need to improve on the running game there, and they need to score within the red zone. You have a small window. Justin Tuck, he's getting older. If he keeps his mojo, he stays healthy.
Victor Cruz being signed, him and Hakeem Hicks out there, that makes for a tremendous offensive team to spread the offense. So the Giants, they have to score. They have to stay healthy. They have to be consistent. That is the key. They have a tough schedule, not as tough as the last two seasons. And also they have to answer the question or find out and attack the problem of the Giants in the second half of the season just sputtering out. They'll have to have an answer for that. Stay healthy, play hard, stay because the NFC East is probably the toughest division in the NFC. Given the teams and the talent that you have, Washington Redskins, Cowboys, even though they can be erratic at sometimes, but that is a tough division. The Giants, Jerry Reese, the general manager, has made it clear that everyone is on the hot seat this year. He wants results. That
everyone should be. See, they look amazingly mediocre over the last few years.
Absolutely.
I think the Giants season turned around. The Giants season turned around when they lost to the Washington Redskins on that Monday night game. The first Monday night game the Redskins had won in what, decades. It gave the Redskins shared the lead. It was a strange game because all the penalties that game came from special teams and from the offense. The defense played a great game. I think they lost in 19-17, something like that. But the defense did a great job. But all the penalties, huh?
73 yards in penalties from the special teams.
And that was a game that we were there live, covered that game live, FedEx Stadium. Cincinnati Sea Wings was there. The game was covered live. And it was a situation where, they lost the game, and who knew that right then and there they were also losing the season. Let's take a quick look at some boxing. Last night, Gary Shaw card down in New Jersey, tremendous card. Darren Barker, who Mike at ringside talked about, he liked his. I remember we were in the gym, and he said, I liked his 1-2 combination. Well, he won a split decision. The title changed hands. Everybody lost their title last night. Barker, who went in now, he's 27-1. Gale had went in at 28-1. So somebody's won was going to be done, and it is. That the champion lost. He's 29-2. Barker's 27-1. He showed so much confidence. He talked about how much it meant to him psychologically in beating and fighting Sergio Sanchez Evidently, it paid off. We got a new IBF middleweight champion.
It did pay off for him, Doc. He learned a lot, Doc. And not to interrupt, but that was a tremendous rumble between he and Teal last night. A tremendous brawl. A test of both their conditioning, their stamina, and their heart.
Right now we got a new IBF champion. Kiko Martinez coming into last night's fight, 28-4 with 20 knockouts. He's the new IBF featherweight champion as he dethroned for the sixth round, 2 minutes and 40 seconds at that TKO, John Holland Romero. Romero 23-0 when he came in. That's gone. A new champion there in Joel Verna beat Mike Oliver, a 10-round. It was a 10-round. You talk so much, Rooney. You redundantly talked about bad scoring. This fight here, all the judges saw it the same way, 78-74. A 10-round unanimous decision, Bruckner over Oliver, and you just, look at the other fight. So we had another fight, Medardi Vargas against John Williams, Cuban. He won the WBC Light Junior Interim Championship. And that fight, again, two judges had it 98-91. One judge had it 98-90. Vargas lost the point, but You have to, and this is what I'm talking about media-wise. There's no applause. There's no recognition of a job well done here. And I'm going back to what we said about the New York media. I mean, Larry Bird told me, the worst media he had to deal with was the Boston media. That's the hometown media. I mean, when you talk Larry Bird, when you talk Dave Righetti, when you talk Don Mattingly, you're talking some very credible, special human beings. There's something wrong with hometown media when hometown players, excuse the expression, are bitching. Okay? There's something wrong when a guy's going to take $500,000, not $25,000, $500,000 less not to play in your town. There's something wrong there, fellas. You know what I mean? There's something wrong. I mean, you can't see that? Well, let's get back to here. But here's a night where the judges were on call. We had one fight. All the judges saw the same way, 78-74. And then the next fight, 98-91, 99-90. You know, let's take your hats off to him. Let's take your hats off to him. Good job there. And the Cuban, Riva Castro, he won last night. Thomas Del Mori over Frankie Figueroa. Reminds me so much when I think of Frankie. I think so much of Frankie Benitez, Harold Weston. Harold Weston told me, how are you here, aren't you? Harold Weston told me that Frankie was actually better than Wilfredo. You know, he was Wilfredo with a punch. Maybe his defense was a little off, but he had some good offense. Anyway, he was a winner last night. And then we also had a knockout and 10. In fact, the more is young Latin prospect, highly touted it. He's 20-1 now. Knockouts, he had 14, and he won last night against Vera. And then we had the last fight, Jonathan Maceo, 20-1-12. He came in and he beat, knocked out Jose Alejandro Rodriguez. Good card down there, boxing after dark, a lot of action. Gary Shaw gave us a really good card. Thanks for it. As always, Ed Keenan for credentials and all the media notes that we needed before getting down there. And once again, the champion, new champion. Three titles changed hands last night. Darren Barker is now the new IBF middleweight champion of the world. You got to figure, depending on how Sergio Martinez is, we lost Dusty. He's in the studio. Depending on how Sergio Martinez is, this is a fight he could go back to as Chavez is off the scene. I don't think Pacquiao or Mayweather are going to fight him. I don't know if anybody wants to fight the Big G, but this is a fight he could say, hey, you know, this guy got the IBF title. I gave him a shot before. It could happen. But anyway, we take our hats off to Barker and his manager, who's a great picture we have here of our photos. You know, open our photos up. We have open with Ali Joe and Don King. I just think you can't say enough about Ali. When I read something the other day where Ali had tracked down at Mendez Gym, man, I should try to get a hold of Mendez. But, you know, Ali said something that was so, it just showed Ali's about. He said, you know, how I want to be remembered. And one thing he said, you want to be remembered as a black man who won the heavyweight title. You want to remember as a guy who was humorous. You want to remember as a guy who stood for justice, equality, you know, and honesty. And he said, you know, and I wouldn't mind if they would help. And this is another profound thing he said. He said, I want to be remembered as a man who never looked down on those who looked up to me. And just, you know, who never looked down on those who looked up to me. And he ended by saying, you know, and I wouldn't mind if they would forget how pretty I was. Great Muhammad Ali. You know, I wouldn't mind if they would forget how pretty I was. And a tremendous card, a pretty card last night, just a workmanlike card. You knew that the main event was going to be a good fight. It was a pick'em fight. It was 50-50, two guys who, as Rooney said, two guys who were going to be prepared. Gary Shaw said before this fight that Gail had to fight the fight he was trained to fight. And on the other hand, when I asked him, well, what could take him away from that, he says, well, if the guy doesn't fight the fight that they had expected, to make the adjustments. And Harold, Dusty so often has talked about the guys in the corner, you know, who in Harold's case, that says, okay, Angelo Dundee, Eddie Futch, Louis Fisher, Emmanuel Stewart, guys who also, besides trainers or your statisticians, guys who give you the strategy. And evidently, it's a split decision. That tells you something right there. You know, it's a split decision. I think a lot of it has to be that if Gail had a bigger name, not too often do you see a champion lose his title on a split decision. But this is a.
What fight impressed you last night the most in that card last night? What fight impressed you last night from that card?
I mean, I was impressed by all the fights. It was just a good card. I was on the Crystal Heart show. Crystal Heart, New York City's number one female sportscaster, and as lovely as you know, she had on this show earlier in the week here, and she asked me who to pick the fight. And I said, hey, you know, it's a pick-up fight. I said, you know, I guess you'd lean toward the champion, but you have to remember, Parker just had so much confidence. I mean, at the press conference, it was like he was the champion already. It was like he was the champion, and he talked with so much confidence, so much ease. And he talked about, one, was the confidence he had in fighting Sergio Montes, how much that had benefited him, not only from a standpoint of view of from fighting, but a standpoint of view of psychologically. And last night, you saw it. It was, you know, you could go either way in the fight, but you have to be impressed by the energy that both of those guys brought in. I like the Cuban fighter.
Yeah.
You know, he was...
He was throwing some punches out there.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, a lot of body work. You know, working the inside. It was a real good card. It's just a real good card.
Yeah.
And I said, you know, I like, you know, you look at that card, that the Oliver-Rugner fight. I mean, all judges saw the same way, 78-74. You know, and then the fight with August, you know, 98-91, 99-90. You know, then you're impressed by the last fight here, you get knocked out in 10. But I like the energy that the title fight brought. And you know what? That in itself could bring you another title fight. That's a good fight to put on a pay-per-view undercard. I mean, it's...
what's that, Doc?
You're looking at maybe that's something that you could put on the Pacquiao... Rios fight, or maybe something
you
could put on the Bradley Marquez fight. You know, it's a good little fight. It would do a lot for the guys' notoriety, but it's the kind of fight that's good for boxing. The energy that those guys brought, it typifies the sport when it's going the way it should.
Okay. And what fight What fight you want to see coming up? What fight you ready to see?
The fight. You want to see Alvarez and
absolutely
and Mayweather, huh?
Okay.
I mean, that's the fight we want to see. I mean,
oh, that's
I
see something there. I see something there, huh?
Yeah. Well, the fight.
I see the Muslim Junior crystal ball, please.
Yeah. Well, hey, listen.
You gotta clean that. You gotta clean that crystal ball sometimes too. You know.
The Muslim Junior crystal ball
is ridiculous.
Hey, What you need is wear them tights a half a size small. I think there's something. You know, I think something.
The high water pants.
You know, but no. You know what? I tell you the fight that I had hoped that they could get together and do was the Pacquiao Mayweather fight. I thought it was a good fight, and I thought it would first of all validate Mayweather as the best, and also validate Pacquiao in some way as a fraud. You know, Pacquiao is nowhere near as super-duper as he's supposed to be. I mean, a point or two here or there, I think the fights with Marquez could have went either way. A lot of people thought Marquez at least won one of those fights before he knocked him out. You know, but that was the fight that I thought I was eventually going to see, but then it became quite clear, me and Tim Smith talked about it, that it was a fight that the powers that be, and Bob Graham was not going to make it, you know. And as you can see, it never was made. The question is, as I talked to Gilberto Ortiz, our working on boxing Latin sportscaster, you know, maybe the fight can still happen. Because if Mayweather gets Phil Alvarez, you know, I don't think Sergio Martinez is going to come down and wait to fight him.
It's so funny. You just took her out of mirror. I was about to ask you. One of these listeners from the other last week wanted to ask you about that. Well, that fight's going to still happen.
Well, it's still good because you know what?
Yeah.
Because and you got to be honest about it, Rooney. You would still want to see that fight.
No, actually, I wouldn't. I think the fight's lost its luster. It's been talked about too much, and I just think the time is coming and gone. If you want my honest opinion, Doc. If you're talking about Pacquiao and Mayweather, I think it's lost its luster.
If they told you that fight was coming on, you're going to watch that fight, Wayne.
I'd watch it, but would I have had the want and I can't wait to see it? No. I'd watch it,
ain't got Time Warner, you're in trouble.
Well, you know what? That's another thing we talked about, Lesnar. But, you know, but see, the honesty about it, Rooney, is that you're going to watch that fight. You know why, Rooney? Because you're a connoisseur. You know, you
oh,
had a lot
good,
of.
But I still say I wouldn't be rushing home.
Well, no, I'm not asking you to be rushing.
I
know you don't have the excitement and the adrenaline that you had for it at first, but but that's a fight that you would still, if they made it, you see.
I'd be much more interested in Alvarez than Mayweather, to be quite honest with you.
How about Marquez and Mayweather? That'd be something.
Well, you see, because the mindset is in a lot of people that Pacquiao can't beat Mayweather now. I mean, if those who thought he could, now they say he can't. And they don't think Marquez can beat Mayweather either. The reason why that you want to see Alvarez and Mayweather, because there's a feeling that Alvarez can beat Mayweather.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And that's from the jump.
I mean, that's nothing new to me. When they first made that rumble,
We're not talking you over there in the green tights with the pink mask and the yellow pink.
I'm sorry, Doc. You know, when they first made that rumble, I said right off the bat, I see something.
No question about it. And you've long been advocating that you like him to do it, and we'll see. But real quickly, like I said, to a certain degree, the fight might have to happen. If Pacquiao can win, Mayweather wins. You know, there may be a situation that there's no other choice, because Martinez is not going to come down. Okay, Alvarez will be out of the way one way or another. And like I said, if Alvarez beats Mayweather, okay, and Pacquiao wins again, there's Pacquiao Mayweather. I mean, there's so many roads that lead to a Pacquiao-Mayweather fight still possibly happening than it is not happening.
Okay,
you know, right
Pacquiao
now.
To retire.
Yeah.
The problem you got with Pacquiao and Mayweather making that fight is money. Floyd is not going to now split with no Pacquiao 50-50 now. No way, no how. And the other thing, Aaron wants to promote it. He's not going to promote it now when Floyd got more leverage on it. So you ain't gonna never see the fight. You can forget about all that.
But what about if Pacquiao, let's say, leaves Top Rank, retires, and leaves Top Rank? If Pacquiao's not with Top Rank, then there's a possibility of that fight happening then, Howard?
When Pacquiao retires, he's gone. He's not coming back. He is finished. He's got all his money he wants. He's got so much on his plate. He's not coming back. I'm telling you, it's over for Pacquiao. It's over now. He should quit right now, tell you the truth.
Really should.
It's really over right now. It's just like a joke watching him fight now.
Have you heard that before, Doc?
Hey, let me tell you something. You know, when you get knocked out like he did, you don't come back with no, better than what you were before. That don't exist. Believe me.
Sunday Sports Network, Blog Talk Radio, and the Trust and Guard Radio Network, the Sunday Sports Wrap, the Green Bay Packers are leading St. Louis 19 zip in a preseason
game.
So they won that one 19 zip. Packers will be playing the Giants this year at MetLife Stadium. We're live at MetLife Stadium with our home machine NFL 411 as the Giants get ready to play and improve upon their preseason record last night. The ETS Jets won big against the Jacksonville.
Hey, Stock, guess who's on the analyst on Fox?
Who's that?
Randy Moss.
Wow.
Oh, my goodness.
You talking about the Fox?
Don't get dark started.
Yep, he's an analyst on Fox on Channel 5 right now.
But why? He should be
playing though. He's a hell of a receiver. He should be out there.
Well, you know what? In a lot of ways they kind of blackballed New England. You know, it's that nonsense about it. It's not the New England way. The Patriots they were a super duper football team with Moss. They became a very good football team when he left. Sort of a Miles Davis type personality. A lot of people think he may be the best receiver ever. He's definitely been one of the greatest of all time. And, he has the personality along with the talent that will bring people, to, like we just said, Randy Moore. I mean, but why would you all know Randy Moore? I mean, the guy was a great player. I mean, I think that's the problem for today. You have too many, excuse the terminology, half-ass players
You know, and like if Gail and Cisco is my pitching coach, what the hell can Gail and Cisco tell me about pitching? What can Gail and Cisco tell me about pitching? I mean, the guy was maybe he won 30 games. You know what I mean? You get a guy that's a lifetime 257 hitter. What can you tell me about hitting? What can you tell me about hitting? It's just a good old boy network. I mean, if you're going to have a coach, Jim Rice is a great batting coach, one of the greatest hitters of all time. Okay, George Brett is a great batting coach. Bob Gibson was a great pitching coach. And Gibson told me he was stunned. He was stunned. He was not stunned, but he was, you know, he couldn't believe that guys coming from the minor leagues, pitchers, didn't know how to turn from second base and throw the ball as a pitcher. But, I mean, you know, coaching has long been a fraternity full of guys putting their buddies in there. I mean, Chris Chambliss, you know, I mean, you look at Chris Chambliss, and, you know, people say it's black or white. You know, how does Chris Chambliss get fired as the batting coach of the world champion Yankees? How do you lose your job as the world champion batting coach? And then, incidentally, he just happened to be African-American. What, strange, isn't it? Strange. Fired. You just won the world championship. You're the batting coach of the world champions, and you get fired. You know, and Randy Moss, I mean, why can't Randy Moss be an announcer? I mean, the guys, you know, all you guys that play pro football are college grads, so they've got a college degree behind them, okay? Uh-huh. The guy's one of the great receivers of all time, and he's got a personality. I mean, if he steps to the mic, let's listen to what he has to say. But I think that's salute to Fox that they give Randy Moss an opportunity.
A job, yes. Mm-hmm.
But I thought, I was with you. I thought Randy could play another season or two. I was sort of dismayed that Randy took that year off. And if you ever notice, the New England Patriots have never been the same team that they were when he was there. And
you
get back
that.
To the Super Bowl. You know, they got back to the Super Bowl, but you know, they never had the swagger. And I remember Tom Brady, when Moss first joined New England, at the first press conference they had when they played the Jets that year, and Brady, I had read what Brady told Randy, you know what, with you here, we can run the table. If you remember, they went undefeated. They went undefeated,
yep.
And you just got to question how the defense didn't do the job to stop Manning. But, you know, they went undefeated. They went 16-0, and then one year they were 11-5, and they didn't make the playoffs. But in his 4 years in New England, okay, he got 1,000 yards every year, and 3 out of 4 years led the league in touchdowns. I mean, how does a guy like that not merit a contract? You know, it's not the New England way, you know, and maybe it's not, as we've seen with Welker. Now I think Welker knew too now has had some bad problems too. Am I right, Cincinnati C?
Yeah, he sustained an injury yesterday. I don't think it's anything major. Expect to probably see him back on the field probably the next game or last game of the preseason. Just real quick, Doc, we're about a little over two minutes away from kickoff here. Just to give you some quick facts on the series between the New York Giants and the Indianapolis Colts. The Giants and the Colts are meeting for the 12th time in preseason tonight. The Colts are up 6-5 historically over the Giants. They have met a total of 14 times in the regular season. The Colts lead the series 8-6. 8-6. They 8-6 over the Giants in the regular season. Up to feet injuries tonight. Antro Roll will not be playing safety from the Giants due to an ankle injury.
Wait, go back. He's not going to play. How bad does that look? Because, you know, he's finally getting back in shape. He's finally going to play. He said he was going to be ready for opening day. So is that still a possibility?
Yeah, it looks like it. I don't think the Giants are going to take too much of a risk, especially this year, and what their goals are to put an emphasis on him playing in the preseason and possibly lose a big-time player like that. Also, fullback Henry Hinoski is on the PUP list due to a knee. JPP also is out, still on the PUP list due to the back surgery. On the Colts and former...
Going back to JPP, and Rooney said that, you know, he could be done. I mean, right now, there's a possibility he could be done. That back thing, it's not something that you shake off
he between the double teaming and injury last year, there's a good chance. He could. I mean, this, we're saying it now. I'm not looking at Rudy's crystal ball. I don't have his crystal ball. I can't look deep into that ball like he does.
It's cloudy right now.
but actually, he has a crystal ball, and he's got a little Ouija board that his dad don't know he got either. Really, because he's Ouija board in the dark. He ain't telling nobody that. But, I mean, I think right here we want to say on Sports and Depth that there's a good chance that we have may see the last of him at 100%. And if this thing doesn't get itself together this year, we may have seen the last of JPP in another 2 or 3 years, Cincinnati.
I think that's always a possibility. I mean, a back injury and surgery is major surgery, especially in a game such as the National Football League, professional football. But we shall see. I mean, he said he feels good. He expects to play out there in the upcoming season, and this is really the marquee season for him to highlight his post-surgery self. So it's something that's going to be monitored. I will keep you guys and our esteemed listeners out there updated. But
we got to welcome back Bradshaw, too. Welcome him back home.
Well, is he
going to play tonight?
No, he's out tonight due to foot problems, which has plagued him, I think.
He still got that foot problem? I thought he was going to play. They say he was better.
No, he's out.
He's out?
Wow. He's not playing.
Does he need to retire? Man.
Oh, they might be saving him for the regular season. But, those are just some interesting facts that the Colts are 8-6 against the Giants in the regular season. Postseason, they're 2-0 against the Giants. Last time they met in the regular season was out in Lucas Oil Stadium, 2010, when they beat the Giants 38-13.
And what's the other guy, Landry? He's coming back home for the Colts, right? How do you think he's going to do with the Colts?
Oh, we'll see. We'll see. I mean, it's the way that this season is, and me and you, Hoopster and Doc, we talk about this all the time, this season here was a very, very odd season, starting just from the free agent season with the different, acquisitions and team cuts of a lot of veteran players. So
it's
now you're starting to see with the injuries and everything, just with a lot of key players going down. So
this is like musical chairs without music, man. It's unbelievable. What are these free agents here? The different uniforms. You don't know who's who now.
It's definitely something to watch. Just real quick around the league, some of the scoring. Cincinnati over the Titans, 27. Eagles, 14. Carolina, 9. Michael Vick was 9 for 10, 105 yards. Cam Newton was 8 for 17, 112 yards. Hey, this is an interesting game here. The New England Saints, 28-20 over Oakland. Drew Brees was 14 of 18, 202 yards, one touchdown. To rookie wide receiver Kenny Stills, number 84. Drew Brees was able to hold, stay in the, move around in the pocket, out of the pocket for 9 seconds without even being rushed and threw for that touchdown. Denver took a shellac in Seattle.
They got waxed. Oh.
Russell Wilson was 8 of 12, 127 yards, 2 touchdowns. Eli Manning, 11 for 16, 163 yards, 1 touchdown. So, Seattle is going to be the team to watch coming out of the West. New York Giants.
I say the 49ers until they prove it beaten.
49ers definitely have a better roster. They're deeper. But I think that Seattle's team to watch.
Yeah, we got to watch that whole division. Got to watch the Cardinals, too, that division. Got to watch the Cardinals, too. They're up and coming. Got to watch out for them, too.
But you're going to have to look out for this year. I believe that new testing is instituted for, as I said earlier, the other day. I believe that the HGH testing starts this year, human growth hormone. So you guys are going to have to be aware that there are going to be some depleted rosters, because I'm sure there are going to be some big names who test positive for the use of HGH. So there are going to be a lot of people who won't be at full strength because of it.
Yeah,
I believe that comes, I believe being guilty comes with a four-game suspension.
Absolutely, Doc, and my esteemed panel, as I move towards, we have the team live action here in the stadium. I will come to you guys live and with updates there.
So this is not the Jets playing, right? They played yesterday, right?
Hey, by the way, see, speaking of the Jets, their running back looked pretty good. Their power back. Was Bilal something, I believe?
Khalil Bell.
That boy from UCLA he's talking about. That boy from UCLA, number 24. That I was telling you about yesterday.
Was
Bilal Powell or whatever it is? Bilal Powell or whatever I think it is?
Yeah.
The guy from UCLA, he was good.
Looked pretty good.
Yeah, that boy, yeah.
Well, as you know, the season is really counts. They'll be back here in a road game playing for the New York Giants. So we'll see, and hopefully at that time they'll have an answer for who their starting quarterback will be. And I said it before, and I'll say it now. It will be Mark Sanchez, but for how long? How many?
All right, we'll see.
Hey, why is Rex giving us this facade about a quarterback competition? There's no damn competition. We all know who's going to be the starting guy on opening day.
He may not have that choice. He may not have that choice solely as the head coach and maybe a lame duck coach at this point. In his picture with the Jets, never heard him say he will be making that choice. It's always been the role of the head coach is to pick the starting quarterback, and you see the tone and the message have changed.
Mm-hmm.
He always includes we, so that he's balanced and he's on a fence thing. He may be on a fence thing as well. He's basically fighting for his job at this point.
Everybody's
Mr. NFL, we're going to stay with you. You can stay as long as you can live at MetLife Stadium. The Jets yesterday were big winners, your team, and the Giants now. You get a chance to, would you – get a chance to go over to the maybe halftime at the Colts media box. Ask Mr. Avis Roper and tell him Doc Stanley said hello and ask him how that boy is doing. Mike, last night we had a good card down in Atlantic City. I remember you in the gym talking about Barker, and you said, "Wow, he's got a good one too." The basic part of boxing. And last night, it was a lot of people. It was a pick-em fight. That was the status quo. That was the word that went around. Barker, good decision. Doesn't happen too much. And I think it wouldn't happen. It wouldn't happen if you had a champion, let's say, of name. You couldn't win a split decision against Mayweather. You couldn't win a split decision against Pacquiao. You couldn't win a split decision against Sergio Martin. But Barker last night won a split decision, no surprise, and both guys were impressive.
Yeah, it was a good fight. There was no loser in that fight last night. Traveling in, it made up for the little bit of time we had there last night. And this guy, it was an amazing story. The fans were really happy. Not too many people there last night, but again, it's you're in the Northeast and you got an Aussie. And the Englishman fighting. And, they gave the crowd their money's worth for who did come. And, the guy had an interesting story, Barker. The fight could have went either way, by the way. I mean, guys, at ringside, all the writers at ringside were just throwing their hands up. They didn't know who the hell to square rounds for. It was, that's how crazy it was. But at the end of the day, Aaron Barker's story is impressive. You know, there's a guy that came back. You know, we talked about it on the panel at the beginning of the other week. I mean, either he's going to win and learn from the Sergio Martinez loss, and it's going to make him a better man, or he's going to sink into just being an opponent. So, the story is there. He pulled off an impressive win.
He talked about, and both of us, he talked about, besides what he learned from a pugilistic standpoint of view against Martinez, he talked about how psychologically it was a lift to him mentally. And there was an air of confidence, an air of I can't lose, and an air of, well, you know what? What's going to happen. But the Martinez fight may have done more for him from a mental standpoint of view than anything else. And he kept explaining that. He kept talking about that when we talked to him on Monday.
Hey, he's a rough kid. I mean, he's a very resilient guy. I mean, he graduated. That Martinez fight graduated him. He wasn't going to be denied. You know, he people don't understand. He got hit with a liver shot. I mean, it's not – when you recover from a liver shot, you're fine. But the question is, can you recover? Your body goes into shock. I mean, anybody from boxing will tell you. I mean, this kid got decked. His body paralyzed. He knew he had to get up. He figured it out. He cringed with the pain, but he fought through it. So, I mean, it goes to show that he's a tough kid. He's a guy that wants to win. He's a durable. And it showed last night. Every time he was hitting this, I watched the replay this morning, he was hitting Gill with bad intentions. I mean, he's got powerful hands. He's not a bad fighter. And
Here's the question I pose now. You know, good fight. I still say Gill has a bigger name. He doesn't lose on a split decision. But, you know, you've got some good it may not be too late for Mayweather and Alvarez. I think it's a good fight, the return match. I think, you know, a return match would be good. It'd be a good fight. It'd be a good fight to stick on one of these pay-per-view undercards. Mayweather and Alvarez, if it's Bradley and Marquez, if it's Rios and Pacquiao, even Cotto and Devlin Rodriguez. It's a good fight to stick on one of these pay-per-view cards, because if the guy's going to bring the kind of fight they did last night, you know, Harold, the boxing will say, hey, man, you know, it's a good fight. And more importantly, it's something that would be advantageous to the so-called decline of boxing. But I just think a rematch is in order, and to put that fight on one of these undercard of one of these pay-per-view fights would be a credit to the game. And also to both of these guys, Mike, I think a rematch is in order, and I think it's a perfect fight to stick in any one of these undercards, one of these pay-per-view fights.
And either way you look at it, I mean, they're both camps are gentlemen. Gary Shaw told him even before he looked, he goes, you want it as a gentleman. He goes, nobody wants to see, nobody could take this moment away from you. I thought that was nothing but class for Gil's promoter to say that. I want a lot of respect for them. And the way that both men engaged each other before and after the fight, I mean, this is what two men do. And I, if anything, I would think Barker, you know, unless a mega fight comes in, I think that he'll grant him the rematch because, you know, just the type of men that they are. And, you know, there's a mutual – and why not? I mean, it was a great fight. You know, who knows? You could probably see a trilogy out of that if it comes down to it. You know what I mean? So.
Okay, does that fight have a shot at Fight of the Year?
You know – I don't think so. I mean, I thought it was an excellent fight.
A great point. Your point you make is apropos. It was a very good fight, sort of an entertaining fight, but not what you call an exciting, action-packed fight. Is that the word?
No,
what
I compared
it
to.
It was exciting and action-packed. It was exciting and action-packed, Doc.
Yeah.
I compare it to
a Miguel Kessler. I compare it to like a Miguel Kessler-Carl Frock type fight. It was enough action, but not like a Rio Salvarado. You know what I mean?
I'm gonna interject here, man. I give Barker all credit for getting up for that liver shot and fighting on, but I think I've seen a lot of fights stop a little bit more premature. If you know they would have stopped that fight because. When he got up, he was walking. He was falling backwards right into the ropes, and I thought the ref was actually going to stop it. Eddie Cotton gave Barker that chance to continue because it looked like any other ref would have probably stopped it. Or not any other ref, but most other refs would have stopped that fight last night because of the way he looked when he got up. He was falling backwards right into the ropes. And then the ref, you know, gave him that chance to continue. If it wasn't for that fight would have been stopped. Two is, I don't know what happened with Gil. I mean, I think he got overconfident or something. I mean, how do you drop a guy from a body shot and then don't continue bagging to the body?
It wasn't a body shot. It's a liver shot. See, that's the problem people don't understand.
It was a liver shot, but he did not. If you knock a guy down from the body, we saw that Barker was able to take his punches, you know. But when he
hit because he caught him in the liver. Because he caught him in the liver.
Gil did not continue banging to the body like he did in that round. And if he would have continued, he probably would have gotten the stoppage. But he,
yeah, but if you're hitting the liver, though, if you're hitting the liver is a one-time shot that you
But the thing is, Chris, the thing with Buffalo saying is that he didn't do it again. Hold on, again, injury update live, Jets, Giants, Colts game. Wide receiver Victor Cruz taken to the locker room for injury to his foot. He's taken in
that's not good. Sent to
David Bars, injured his left knee, was also taken to the locker room for an x-ray. You have the Giants right now.
Okay, so you're telling us right now, live from Midlife Stadium, Victor Cruz is injured and taken off the field. And, wow, we're talking about the first quarter. It's
first quarter, wow.
This preseason, you keep us updated on how serious that injury is?
Absolutely. As soon as we get the word on the condition.
Yeah, that's going to hurt.
So,
that's going to hurt Eli. That's going to hurt Victor.
Well, it may not be as bad as...
Hope it's not serious.
First
quarter, no first quarters, man. He should be using this time right now. The starters on the bench until, say, the third or fourth preseason game. All he should be doing is evaluating talent.
It's the first quarter. As you remember, Cruz has not been in any preseason action before with the training camp. But, you want to get him out there.
I'll keep you guys coming to you live on the Sports Stuff on the Blog Talk Radio Network via the Trust and Guard Network. We'll be coming to you live from MetLife Stadium, New York Giants versus Indianapolis Colts. Senator Davis Boss was taken to the locker room for injuries to his left knee, x-rays, and wide receiver Victor Cruz, injury to his foot. Also taken to the locker room for x-rays. I will be keeping you updated live on Sports Depth on Blog Talk Radio, live from MetLife Stadium.
Okay, so Cincinnati Sea Wings just gave us the latest on that. He'll be back with us shortly. We'll get back to the argument we were just having. I don't know. Okay, Mike and the Cisco Kid are going at it. I think Mike is saying the devastation of the shot was caused by being a liver shot. Cisco is saying, regardless of the devastation of the shot, the fact that he abandoned that kind of body attack. And I remember Gary Shaw saying that if he fights the way he was trained to fight, I'm thinking that right now you're telling me, Cisco, that at that point in juncture of the fight, then he no longer kept doing what he was trained to do. And Mike, you know, Cisco's right. I mean, you gotta wonder, why did he not do what he did to knock him down? And at the same time, Cisco, will take a hats off to you. As that whole card last night, you know, you salute the judges. You know, on the Bruckner-Oliver fight, all the judges saw it the same way. The Vargas fight, they were all on board, 98, 91, 99, 90. And now you're telling us that Eddie Cotton has to be saluted as allowing Barker to go on as anybody, and by Barker winning, man. Is any bigger, higher validation? I got to give Cotton a call, validation than that. But what is said here, with Cisco starting it off, and Mike, you hold on a second, is Cisco, you're stunned by his reluctance to do what he did to put him on the canvas.
Yeah. I mean, I just think Barker needs to really give Eddie Cotton a hug, a big hug, because if he would have stopped that fight last night, he would have not gotten his chance to win the fight. I mean, he would have got stopped, right? But what I saw from Gil was that it's almost like he got cocky in there. It's almost like it happens a lot with fighters. They score knocked down or they hurt their opponent, they tend to get a little bit overconfident and abandon their game plan. Once you see you touch the guy to the body and he kind of folds some way, you attack him there. That's pretty much it. That's your bread and butter right there. That's probably your opportunity to win the fight. And when he hurt him there, it just didn't just go away. He was, when he got up, he was still hurt. I just thought that. Because remember this, when he got up, he was on wobbly legs. And on wobbly legs from a body shot, not from a head shot. He wasn't walking crooked because he got hit to the head. He got hit to the body and he was walking crooked. So means he was still in pain. Whatever Gil did after that, I don't know why he didn't go after the body. He stopped his body attack knowing that he was able to drop him with a punch to the liver. So, I just think that Gil kind of gave it away. But, you know, you got to give Barker his props. He did come back. He did get an opportunity to come back, and he did. He did fight on. He didn't quit. He came back in that round, too, a little, you know, solid towards the end of it. So, I was picking Gil to win, and actually, I don't like to be wrong, but I was wrong last night. I mean, it was a close fight, but Gil definitely lost that fight, and I think he blew it. I think he blew it.
So, Gil was a little too erratic, too, in his shots, I think. He smothered himself a little too much, got a little excited.
Yeah. Barker was a little bit more sharper with his combinations than Gil was.
Yeah.
Even, like I said, even though Gil was able to land that money punch, he didn't capitalize on that. And Barker just continued, you know, honestly, he continued doing what he does best. And his punches were sharper than Gil. And even from the beginning.
The funny part about that fight, the interesting part about that rumble is that Gil is traditionally known as the guy who finishes the rumble strong towards the end, and this time it was actually Barker who finished a slightly stronger.
Yeah, Barker didn't fade. I was a little confused, though. You know, I mean, one thing I do have to say, and I don't know, maybe it's me, with the knockdown and with the Gil finishing strong in the 12th, I'm really surprised that they gave Barker the fight. I mean, I think a fight could have went either way. I thought Barker did enough to win.
Anytime you have a split decision and you have a draw and a champion is, you know, for a championship fight, I think sometimes you do kind of question, you know, how it came about. Harold, I mean, you know, you've been there, you've done that, you've seen it as a fighter, you've seen it as a matchmaker. Usually a split decision and a draw and a championship fight means that champion usually kind of gets the benefit of the doubt, Howard, yes or no?
Yeah, most of the time champion gets, I mean, it's almost like saying the guy, the challenger won it, but we can't give it to him right now. We're going to give it to the champion because it's that close. And so, you know, they'll set it up for
sacrifice,
for a rematch, you know, for a rematch and everything. So, I mean, there's been a lot of split decision where champions have lost. There's been quite a few split decisions where champions won fights. I mean, lost their titles. But the fact is that, you know, it's just it's where you're fighting at. That's one thing. And the one that really makes it happen being a split decision is, can they make the fight back and will it draw as many people again? You know, that kind of situation. So, I mean, it all depends on what kind of leverage the fight can go in a rematch if they make the split decision.
You know,
and I hate to say it that way because of the, you know, because the sport's supposed to be just up and up. But, I mean, it does have its politics in it, no matter how you look at it. It does have its politics.
Yeah, I think what's funny is that it wasn't that fight that I was really amused by. Even though it was a good fight of the night, but you got to give Kiko Martinez his props on beating a so-called undefeated fighter in Romero last night. You know, that to me was what showed you when you see these guys that come on and they're undefeated with a lot of knockouts or whatever, and this guy Kiko Martinez, who actually is part of Sergio Martinez's camp, comes out there and knocks the guy out. I believe it was, what, the sixth round or something like that? I can't remember.
You know, yeah. You know, and I agree with you. That guy, that little guy was so possessed that, you know, he threw a lot of punches. You go, we got to say, I mean, from round one, he was so possessed, he was not going to let up on that guy. And
no.
He threw a lot of punches and missed a lot of punches, but he came to win. They had a plan. He came to win. He trained hard for that fight because I guess they had him in the gym every day just throwing punches nonstop, 3 minutes, 4 minutes around. Because he was in great shape. And I mean, he was throwing hard punches. I mean, he was throwing hard punches. He was not going to let that title get away last night.
Look like he was in good shape, too. Good conditioning, too.
Well, he came out the first round, he came out for business.
That's what I'm saying. From the round one, he never let up. He never let up the whole time. I thought he was going to get tired going down, you know, coming down strip. But the other guy was just stupid. I mean, he just laid on the darn rope like he's like the guy with the one-stop punches. I mean, don't you see this hurricane coming through here? I mean, it was just insane.
Is there any word on that guy? I heard he got rushed to the hospital last night, from what I heard.
I think he should have been. I mean, because he was some vicious body punches.
Yeah, they should have stopped that fight earlier. That guy was in la-la land, man.
He was soccer pop.
You guys got to understand, you in a championship fight, you got to give the guy the champion or the other fighter.
Harold, not to cut you off, but see, this is the problem that we have nowadays. Champion. That kid is not a champion, okay? With all these different titles, there's a kid that had no business being in the ring with a kid like Martinez. Whoever looked at that kid, you know, the records, they look differently. That kid wasn't ready for a championship fight. That kid did not know how to get himself out of the way of punches.
That's the problem. That's the problem with boxing. You got
I can't argue with you. I've been saying for long. You got the bad trainers and everything. They rush these kids to these championship fights and say this. And you see them, they just give them belts all over
that
the place.
That kid was undefeated. He must have beat up 30 cab drivers. There's no way.
He's a good, you know what? He's a good little technician, but like I said, he had picked a lot of his opponents, and he just went through that. But he had a fighter in front of him last night. He had a real fighter in front of him.
The problem with fighters like Jonathan Romero last night was that he was never really truly developed. You know, they padded up his record, and then they put him against a real guy, and he folded. I mean, he actually came back in the second and third round and was actually outboxing Kiko. Was landing pretty decent combinations, but eventually Kiko's pressure got to him, and he was able to just not kick the crap out of him, dude.
That kid, if that kid knew how, and this is the hardest thing to do, I'm just saying it now, but if he knew how to punch going backwards and everything, he would have did good with Martin, but he didn't know how to punch going backwards, and that was his big problem. And when he did go backwards, all he could do was just hold his hand.
Because Howard, he had real fast hands, but he didn't know how to do it.
Yeah, right.
He couldn't fight going backwards.
That was his big problem. That's where the kid got the best of him. And let me tell you something, fella. When my man Martin was missing them wild punches and everything, and he didn't get. There used to be a word back in the day, say, if you miss, make them pay for it. All right. When he made that kid miss all them wild left hooks and right hands, he should have dug something underneath it, but he didn't know how to do that either. And that was we talked about that before. The trainers didn't never teach him those things.
Well, gentlemen, I gotta step out of here. I wanna say goodnight to everybody because I have another engagement that I have to go into here. But we all gonna talk tomorrow after the Jacobs fight.
Oh man, that's that fight tomorrow. Wow, Jesus, I forgot all about that. We're going to call before the Jacob fight or we're going to talk at the Jacob fight.
All right, just keep me posted. You guys have a wonderful night, okay?
Okay.
All right, Mike. All right,
man, a good one. The one I want to see down the line is Danny Garcia and Matuse. That's the one I'm dying to see down the line.
Matuse?
Guy comes in like a warrior, like that kid Martinez came in last night.
He was possessed. He was not going to let that title go. And you saw where they had a new trainer in this corner. That was the new thing, too, going on. He had Martinez training in the corner.
Yeah, he had Martinez training, but, yeah, that's pretty much it.
Yeah, I mean, he trained him for the fight. And, I mean, they trained him good. I mean, they really had him ready for the fight. I got to give him credit. He was not going to let this guy take this title away. I haven't seen a fighter like that throw so many hard punches. I saw it one time when Duran fought Buchanan, where he was throwing punches, boy, from everywhere, hard punches every round, where he just, you know, you just thought he was going to get tired. He never got tired, and he stopped Buchanan. But that's been a long time since I've seen a kid fight like that. They would really put it all out.
The guy that you fought, I want to know how he would have done against Duran if they could have matched up the weights in their prime. How would Pepino Cuevas have done in his prime with Duran out?
Duran knocked Pepino Cuevas out.
Yeah, I know, but they were both over the hill then. I mean, in their prime.
Hold on,
buddy.
Let me tell
you something
about Duran.
Hold on. Give us an update.
Lee Williams coming to you live from MetLife Stadium. Off of 8 plays, 81 yards for possession of 3 minutes and 52 seconds. The Colts scored a touchdown off of a 28-yard pass from Andrew Luck to Reggie Wayne. New York Giants 3, Indianapolis 7. Victor Cruz is back out on the field in street clothes. He will not play the rest of the night, which...
Wow.
By him being out there, it shows that it's not a serious injury. It's precautionary at this point. So,
that's good.
New York Giants 3, Colts 7. Coming to you live on the Sports and Death Blog Talk Radio via the Trust and Guard Network, Sea Wings Live, MetLife Stadium. New York Giants, Colts.
Yeah, real
All
quick, right. Nobody take a poop. We'll be back in a second. Sports and Death Blog Talk Radio. We're live at like and we got the latest insight to go on one and deep show. Like deep stress. Don't worry about it. They're telling us that Victor Cruz is back on the field. He's not in uniform but street clothes, so we only they're gonna take him, but I heard you screaming and yelling. They're gonna be cautious with him. So he is he's all right. And Giants right now trailing Colts 7-3. Anybody, Hal, you said they're standing in front of Roberto Duran. Take it from there, Big Al.
Duran would have stopped Pepino Cuevas at any time, because one thing about Duran, anybody that stays in front of him, he's a devastating body puncher. He's smart inside. He can hit you if you stand in front. That's the time he'll take you apart. That's the time he beat Iran Barkley so easy in that fight, because Iran still right in front of him. And when Pepino fought him, same thing. I mean, you can't stand in front of Duran, because that's his fight. As long as he don't have to use his legs and all he's using is his upper body and can deliver his punches the way he wants to punch, he's gonna be in there all night long, and he's got a good shot at knocking you out, because he's a smart fighter at the same time. So that's to come guys that beat him is guys that box him from the outside and everything.
Was that Ray Leonard's mistake in the first fight, Al? Was that Sugar's mistake in the first fight, standing in front of him?
Well, the first fight with Ray. Ray had never got hit real hard in a long time in his whole life. And so when he got hit with Duran and everything, that shook Ray up. That's what really happened with what happened to Ray. And Ray wasn't used to getting shaked up like that. And Duran just started swarming all over Ray. Because everybody thinks Ray didn't throw a lot of punches. Ray threw punches when he had you hurt. But Ray, at times, will set things up in a way where if he's ahead of the game, he'll throw his, little flirt combination. But you back Ray up. Ray cannot fight going backwards. And that's what people didn't understand. That's when we never made the fight with me and him, because that was the whole strategy we were going to do. That, and Dundee told Gil Clancy, he said, I ain't never making no fight with Ray and Dundee West. You got to be crazy. He said, I did it before, and he beat the shit out of us. So, I mean, the thing was is that you got to know Ray Leonard. You know what I'm saying? Ray's a good fighter, but just certain style guys that he couldn't handle. And that was the whole thing about Ray. I mean, if you're stationary, you're like
in front of him. Was it in St. Howard? You told me that Aaron Pryor would have beat Ray Leonard.
Yeah, he beat the shit out of him. He beat him before. He beat him in the amateurs 3 times.
Yeah, he beat him in the amateurs. And also in sparring, I heard he used to get the
belt. Right, beat the shit out him. Ray never wanted to fight Aaron Price. Never, ever. Aaron Price is crazy.
Two things, Harold. We got to sugarcoat that S word, but more importantly, the fact that you say he didn't want to, Ray Leonard never did fight him. Never. I mean, I remember when Hawk stepped to him in the podium, and Ray said no. I mean, you
because
had a
they
press conference.
They fought in the amateurs, and he beat the dog out of Ray in the amateurs. Ray was not going to fight him now.
I remember y'all had a press conference at the Garden. I remember doing the story, writing for then the legendary New York, the legendary Big Red News, The Plight of Aaron Pryor. Hey, listen, there was a time not only Ray Leonard didn't want to fight Aaron Pryor, nobody wanted to fight Aaron Pryor. I don't think anybody told Kim Pomboulet how good Aaron Pryor was.
They thought, let me just say something. When you look at Aaron Pryor and the way he fought, you never thought that he was that clever because he had his hands down and he really didn't look like he moved his head that much.
But sometimes he could really catch him.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Hey, Harold, how come they call him the Hawk?
Well, I mean, they call him the Hawk because he was the Hawk. I mean, simple as that. I mean, Aaron Price, he had to just prove people wrong. You know, people got a lot of mouths. Media, everybody's talking. They think the guy can't fight. You know, he's going to get knocked out by Alexis Guerrero. He's too wide open and all that. And, I mean, they just talk, but they don't understand. Aaron Pryor fought anybody that wanted to fight him coming up. Aaron Pryor didn't have no buns fighting. He fought guys to get to the top. He fought guys. I mean, and that's what people don't see. And he stayed undefeated fighting guys. Look at Aaron. Aaron Pryor lost one fight in his whole life, okay?
Yeah.
He was on drugs. That was the whole thing. But he lost one fight in his whole life. That's how good Aaron Pryor was. Aaron Pryor was unbelievable, man. Unbelievable. But nobody gives him a lot of credit, man. But
he beat Tommy Hearns in the amateurs, too.
He fought everybody.
Right. And, you know, the point you make here, too, he lost one fight. And actually, it wasn't the fight that he lost in the ring. It was the fight that he lost to drugs. But only one. Okay. I mean, you know, he didn't beat Alexis Aguayo. He retired Alexis Aguayo. The great Ray Charles Leonard would never fight him. He beat Tommy Hearns in the amateurs. And everybody talks about what a great job Wilfred Benitez did, and he did at 17 years old beating Kid Pomboulet. Pryor beat Kid Pomboulet. No, Pomboulet was no
second. Gave him a second loss.
Huh?
Gave him a second loss.
David said there, Cisco.
Oh, yeah, Kid Pomboulet's second loss.
Gave him a second loss. Benitez gave him his first loss.
I mean, that's all you need. I mean, all you had to know about Pomboulet is the two
losses. But the difference was Benitez was 17 years old.
But Pomboulet, Pomboulet was a hell of a fight. I mean, he was champion for like about 6 or 7 years before Benitez beat him.
What was his forte? What made him so good, Pomboulet?
He was a crafty fighter. I mean, he was by the books. I mean, he did everything that needed to be done correctly. He had good jab. He had good right hand. He was tall, and that was a good thing. He was smart. He was almost like Alexis Oguelo to a point, but he was real crafty and he can punch. And that was the other key point. He had a punch. But he had that height over a lot of guys his weight class. That was the other key point.
Was his style similar to Laguna?
Nah, he had a little bit more punches than Laguna. He punched a little bit harder than Laguna.
He had a ripping
body punch too. That left hook to the body. I mean, he knew how to rip that left hook to the body, and that was the whole thing. He's a good 15-round fighter too.
They were talking about making him and Duran at 140. There's no question, Duran. To my mind, would have beat him, but Durant said when they tried to make the fight, Laguna and them, not Laguna, adios mio, Pomboulet's people, Durant said they were just crazy with the money. So he said, Durant said, you know what, I'm going to 147. But at 140, did he stand a chance against Durant, Harold?
It would have been interesting.
Was it Harold? What did you say, Harold?
It would have been interesting. It would have been an interesting fight.
You know what's surprising, Harold, before I finish? When I knew this guy was, when I knew Duran was really just out of this world, not when he was a lightweight, because everybody knows that, he fought, and Doc, you remember this, Rumble, I think before he was going up to 47, I think I saw him absolutely destroy Carlos Palomino, man. I'm like 140 on the way up.
You know what's so funny about Carlos Palomino? Carlos Palomino was never a threat for the welterweights. I mean, he won the title. Don't get me wrong, he won the title. But he got a gift for getting the title shot, all right? But in the welterweight division at that time, he was the last person in the welterweight division that anybody had was worried about of him, you know, winning the title. I mean, it was just so funny about mentioned the Palomino name. Nobody got scared. Let's say that.
We're going by the Giant Stadium. Cincinnati Sea Wings, what you got for us?
Cincinnati Sea, checking in live. Off of the Peyton, Eli Manning was intercepted by number 28 of the Colts, Greg Toner. A pass to Hakeem Nicks, which resulted in a four-play, seven-yard drive by the Indianapolis Colts, resulting in a 52-yard field goal by Adam Vinatieri at the end of the first quarter. The New York Giants 3, Indianapolis 10. We have a injury update. Victor Cruz, he is out for the rest of the game with a bruised heel. David Boss is out for the rest of the game with a sprained knee. Both X-rays were negative on Boss and Victor Cruz.
Thanks for that. Cincinnati C. Cincinnati 041 live from MetLife Stadium. Cruz, bruised ankle, is out for the rest of the game. Thank God, not the season. And also the other injury updates, the Colts get a field goal, and now they're up 10-3 against the Giants. MetLife Stadium, the Giants playing their second preseason game, first home. They'll be home next week. And the New York Super Bowl, where they play the New York Giants. Cincinnati C, thanks a million. We'll be going off the air in another 10 or so. So if anything happens, we're cooking another 5-7 minutes. Please get back to us right away. Back to Harold Weston, Carlos Palomino. Duck you, Rudy, I remember that fight at the Garden because that was the night that Larry Holmes fought Mike Weaver. And I remember Duran was the mini main event. And I remember Carlos Palomino, Duran was making his way up to 147. And I remember when Carlos Palomino sat down after the first round, he had a look on his face like, what am I doing here? This is the place not to be on a Friday night. You know, I mean, he had like, you know, y'all didn't tell me this, you know what I mean? And he said, you know, maybe Harold Weston made this fight. And I remember after the fight when Duran won, they asked Duran, you know, could he knock Palomino out? He said, nah, I didn't train like I should. It was a carnival in Panama, and I didn't have time. And it was just, and if I remember, Weaver was ahead on that fight, and Larry Holmes came back and knocked him out. Well, I remember I went to watch some of the prelims because, like I said, Harold was in the Garden, so I owned the Garden, and I was in his dressing room, and in comes Larry Holmes, Richard Petty, and his crew. They looked at me, they just act like they was in my room. They just, oh, hey, how you doing? And I only left. I was in the champ's dressing room, only left that second shoot, ran fight live, but I remember Carlos Palomino, but again, you also talked about how that was a setup where, you know, you knew after when you fought that fight in Puerto Rico against Benitez, you knew full well that the deck was stacked against you because they had already set the deal there was going to be Benitez and Palomino, correct?
No, what it was is that they how the whole thing went down was this, is that my contract was the winner between me and Benitez was going to fight Ray Leonard, and we were going to get a million dollars for the winner, you know. So, but the fight was in Puerto Rico, and unfortunately, you know, I had to take the fight because of the fact that it was in Puerto Rico. But I knew I could beat Benitez, but I knew, you know, one thing, I had to knock him out to win it. Because, I mean, the deck was stacked against me because of the fact there was $1 million on the table. And Jim Jacobs and them, you know, they didn't give Benitez all this money. So, you know, to win the title and make the money back for them. So, I just knew I had to do what I had to do and wish and hope that God give me that strength to do it.
Unfortunately, I wasn't able to do it, but I went 15 rounds.
Wow.
It was Palomino that Duran Compromiso. It was Palomino that Benitez beat for the welterweight title, correct?
Right. He beat him for the welterweight title. And that was what you're talking about, Doc, was this. Palomino's supposed to be fighting me, okay? Because when Palomino won the title from John Stracy in London, England, I supposed to be fighting John Stracy because I was the number two contender. He wasn't even. Palomino was at number 10, okay? He just barely made the ratings at that time. So, but Stracy had just knocked out Jose Napoli, and that's where the whole confusion came in at because I was going to fight Napoli for the title. But Stracy didn't want to fight because Stracy was number one, I was number two. So Stracy said, people said, we don't want to fight him in Mexico. So I said, fuck it, I'll fight him, all right? So the fight is going to be made with me and Jose Napoli in Mexico, right? Then Stracy turned around and said, I want to fight him. Because I knew Napoli was finished. Because when Napoli fought Mano Muniz that second time, he was drained out of that. If you saw the fight, he was completely drained. He won the decision and everything, but he was drained with Jose. You know, time was catching up with him. So I knew I could beat Napoli. I knew I could stop him because he cut easy too. That was the other thing. Slick fighter, but I knew that, you know, when time catches up with you, ain't nothing you can do. You know what I'm saying? So I knew I could beat Napoli. I wanted to fight Napoli anyway because he beat Griffin. But Stracy comes back and says, no, I'll take the fight. He takes the fight. The winner between Napoli and Stracy is supposed to fight me, okay? That's what's supposed to be the deal. The guy, Stracy wins the title. His people says, no, we ain't fighting Winston. You got to take us to court, all right? So now we go through the procedure. He turns around, and he goes and fights. He wants to fight a super fight. He said, well, I'll fight you when I get me one fight. And he had to get one fight. So his easiest opponent in the division, who was it? Carlos Palomino. So he takes the fight with Carlos Palomino and lose the title. And then Palomino's supposed to fight me and everything. Now I'm sitting there number one contender, okay? Number one contender. And then he says, Palomino manager said, you gotta lock us up, take us to court before we fight West. So they ducked us and everything. And Palomino went on and on and defended the title three or four times and turned around. And now they said, then Gil really got pissed off. And then Benitez gets the shot with Carlos Palomino. Well, I should have got the shot. And then they said, okay, that's when they said the winner of this fight will fight Weston. And we had a contract that and that person with Benitez, with any who wins, will fight Ray Leonard after. And that's how it all went down.
Yeah. Wow, that's awesome history, Al. Awesome history.
Rooney, give it to us. Sports and Depth, Block Talk Radio, Professional God Radio Network. Rooney, tell people we got to go.
Oh, good, Doctor. Another awesome, awesome show. The Sports and Depth Nation's been here. The Sports and Depth panel's been here. I'm Mel Smith, Jr. I've been here. We've been here courtesy of the Trust in God, the Radio Network. And the store that serves the drink has been here. And that's been the incomparable Doc Stanley. Thank you, Doc.
Thank you, Rooney. Three thoughts. Live your life today and never stand for God tomorrow. Life's most persistent, most urgent question is, what are you doing for others? Service to others, and what you pay for your space here on Earth. Larry Hardesty, you got something to say?
Thank you for joining us for this installment of Sports in Depth with the legendary Doc Stanley. We hope you join us, and please tell a friend about Sports in Depth, heard every Wednesday and Friday from 12 to 2 p.m. on SAR-FM Radio, the heartbeat of Africa, in the heartbeat of the Big Apple, New York City, in the heartbeat of Harlem.
I just want to ask a question. Who really cares?
The latest baseball score from last night, Rangers 15-5 perfect defeat over the Mariners.
Who
the Tigers
cares?
50 of the Royals. Miguel Cabrera, number 40. Indians 7-1 over the A's.
Now come a time.
I'm back 15-5 over the Pirates. Indians 7-1 over the A's. The Cardinals won the three of the Cubs and the Dodgers once again. What?
When the world won't be singing, flowers won't really cares? Who really cares? Who's willing to try?
Who is willing to try
to save a world?
To save a world
that's destined to die.
That is destined to die.
When I look at the world,
when I look at the world,
it fills me with sorrow.
It fills me with sorrow.
Little children today,
children today,
really gonna suffer tomorrow.
Really suffer tomorrow.
Oh, what a shame.
What a shame.
Such a bad way to
such
live.
Such a bad way to live.
Oh, who is to blame?
Who is to blame?
We can't stop
when
living.
When we can't stop living. Oh, oh.
Live.
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 Live
for life.
Live for life.
But let's live, everybody.
Live life for the children.
Live life for the children. Oh, for the children.
See, let's save the children. Let's save all the children.
But who really cares? Who's willing to try?